Good morning, everyone, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to JBS First Quarter of 2020 Results Conference Call. With us here today, we have Gilberto Tomazoni, Global CEO of JBS, Guilherme Cavalcante, Global CFO of JBS, André Nogueira, CEO of JBS USA, Wesley Batista Filho, CEO of JBS South America, and Cristiane Assis, Investor Relations Director. This event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After JBS remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of JBS management. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur. Now I'll turn the conference over to Gilberto Tomazoni, Global CEO of JBS. Mr. Tomazoni, you may begin your presentation.
Good morning and welcome to JBS First Quarter 2020 Earnings Conference Call. The world is facing an unprecedented challenge and we are collectively fighting the coronavirus pandemic. Therefore, our primary focus is the commitment towards the health and safety to our members and the purpose of safely producing food for millions of families around the world. Our more than 240,000 team members around the globe are doing their best to ensure that food remains available at the time when our fellow global cities need it most. I truly believe that the men and women of JBS are heroes for their service. I thank our entire team for serving the greater food and helping society during this moment. JBS has adopted and implemented enhanced preventive measures and health protocols to safeguard the safety and protection to our team members in every facility around the world. We have partnered with health professionals and disease prevention experts to review and validate our procedures. Importantly, we have continuously evolved our operation to reflect the best available science expert guidance. Our entire approach to mitigate the potential introduction of a spread of coronavirus in our facility has been managed by our COVID-19 Crisis Committee, which is led by the company global leadership team. We are facing this crisis at our best moment. Financially, we are extremely solid. Liquidity at the end of the first quarter was 4.6 billion and which 3.5 billion in cash, representing that more than five times our short-term obligation and enough to pay all of our debt until 2025. The second, diversification production platform by region and by type of product, which by itself represents a great competitive advantage. But with all of this volatility that the market are facing, it has become a vital to mitigate setbacks in one or another market, or even from one protein to another. The third, people and culture. The binomial made up by a culture that prioritizes an attitude of ownership, the sense of urgency and determination to make it happen, and by a very experienced leadership team, will be decided to navigate a market in which great change are happening. We are presenting a quarter of solid results. Revenues of 56 billion reais, which represents year-over-year growth of 27.3%. And when we discount the exchange rate, growth was around 10%. 3.9 billion reais of adjusted EBITDA. Adjusted net income of 800 million reais. And reported net loss of 5.9 billion, which considered no cash effects impact of 8.2 billion reais. Leverage ratio of 2.17 times in dollar and 2.77 times in reais. The world is going through a humanitarian crisis, an emergency in the area of health and social assistance. Conscious of our responsibility of good corporate citizens, JBS is committed to making a positive impact in the lives of people and support the communities where we live and work, and we live and work. The JBS Board of Directors approved a 700 million reais donation to help combat the effects of COVID-19 pandemic. Our social responsibility investment will extend to all regions at the global, where we are present and will be overseen by an advisory committee comprised by expert medical advisors and audit by Grant Thornton, which waived its fee to participate in the program. We are confident that this moment will eventually pass. When this is over, we will live knowing that we have done our best to protect the health and the safety for our team members, that we have fulfilled our mission to feed the world during the most challenging moment of our generation, and that we have stood side by side with the society when we were needed most. Now I ask Guilherme to go through the numbers and talking about the business operation. Guilherme, please.
Thank you, Tomazoni. Please, let's start on page 13 of the presentation, where we compare the first quarter 2020 results with the first quarter 2019, where we have 18% FX depreciation between those quarters. Even though our revenues in reais increased 27%, reaching 56.5 billion reais, our gross profit reached 7.3 billion reais, and our adjusted EBITDA reached 3.9 billion reais with an EBITDA margin of 6.9%. Also in this page, we see our reported net loss of 5.9 billion reais, which is impacted with the FX variation on the US dollar debt when translated into the real balance sheet. This generated an impact of 8.2 billion reais, which is a not cash impact. And if we take this out and their tax effects, we should, so excluding the FX variation, we should have reported a net profit of 800 million reais. Now, please moving to page 14, we see that our operational cash flow increased in 43%, reaching 1.1 billion reais, and our net interest expenses decreased in $26 million in the quarter compared to the quarter of last year. So this is in line of our decrease in our cost of debt that forecasts a savings for the year of around $100 million, which could be a little less depending on how long I will continue to work with my cash position above normal levels as an insurance for the volatility that we are facing. Also in this page, we see our free cash flow, which is a cash consumption of 637 million reais, which is a lower consumption than the same quarter last year. It's worth mentioning that every first quarter we have a cash consumption. It's a seasonal effect, mainly because of a concentration of suppliers' payments in the beginning of the year, inventories building, and tax payments. Now, please, let's move to page 15, where we talk about our debt profile. On the left hand, we see that our leverage that we should look in dollars, given that 90% of our cash generation are in dollars and 94% of our debt are also in dollar. So we ended the quarter with a 2.17x net debt to EBITDA. This compared to the end of the year that we had a 2.13x. It's mainly a maintenance level of our leverage ratios with a very small increase and keeping us on a very comfortable level of net debt to EBITDA. I think you can easily calculate how much you need that the EBITDA for the next quarter should fall in order for you to reach 2x. It's a very improbable scenario. So we will continue probably on this comfortable range of leverage. The leverage in reais rose from 2.16 at the end of the year to 2.77 at the end of the quarter, again, because of the impact of the debt translation into the balance sheet in reais, which was done by the effects of the end of the quarter, which was 5.19. In the same time, the EBITDA in reais for the last 12 months was being generated in dollars but translated into an average effect of 4.1. So this difference from the average effects of the last 12 months and the effects of the end of the quarter increases this leverage ratio momentarily. Once the effect is stabilized at some level, our EBITDA in reais, where our EBITDA is generated in dollars and then translated into reais into a higher level, it starts to converge this real leverage with the dollar leverage. Now, on the right-hand side, we see what Tomazoni mentioned, our robust liquidity position of $4.6 billion. We had, at the end of the year, $4.5 billion in liquidity, so we kept this comfortable liquidity position despite the small cash consumption of the quarter. And it's worth mentioning that we withdraw $850 million in revolving credit facilities in U.S., and we're raising almost $500 million in trade finance in Brazil, both withdrawals just to build up cash. If we didn't have withdrawn this revolving and if we didn't raise this trade finance, we still have more than $2 billion in cash position. So this capital raising was just to improve our cash position in an uncertainty time, and we can prepay it at any time when you think that the volatility will start to become lower. Now, this liquidity, if you look, it's enough to cover all the amortizations of the debt up to the middle of 2025. And this liquidity of the end of the quarter, if we add up the expenses already announced after the end of the first quarter, which is the acquisition of the Empire Packing, the 1.4 billion reais dividends that we paid, the 750 million reais acquisition of the margarine, and the 700 million of donation announced this year, even adding these announced expenses, our liquidity is still enough to take us up to the end of 2024. On the bottom of the page, we see that we increased from the end of the last year our exposure to commercial banks that was only 8%. We increased it to this 15%. It's worth mentioning that the bond markets are less favorable now, so we are using the credit limits that we have available for the company with the commercial banks. On this page, still we see that we decreased it from the first quarter of 2019. We had an average cost of debt in dollars of almost 6%, and we ended this quarter with an average cost of debt of 5.28%. So that's reason, as we saw on the interest expenses savings. Now, let's talk about the business units' performance. We'll begin talking about Seara. The main first quarter highlights for Seara was a net revenue of 5.8 billion reais, 39% higher than the first quarter 2019, boosted by a 14.5% growth in sales volume and 22.2% in average sales price. EBITDA for the quarter was 983 million reais, an impressive 254% increase with an EBITDA margin of almost 17%. For the domestic market, net revenue was 2.9 billion reais, a 24.7% increase over the first quarter of 2019, with a 3.8% higher volumes and a 17.5% higher prices. Processed foods category was the highlight, posting an increase of 8.4% in volume sold and 8.1% in average sales price to this period. Seara continues increasing its preference with the Brazilian consumer through a strategy based on quality, innovation, and execution. For the fifth consecutive Nielsen assessment, Seara maintained its market leadership in the frozen food category with 23.4% of the share and 1.7 percentage points above the second brand, and reached the leadership in the meatless product market with the Incrível Seara line. In addition to growing in the organic chicken category with the Seara Orgânico line. Additionally, Seara has consolidated its innovation launched in 2019 and has been delivering record results in Incrível Seara Gourmet, and Seara Nature product lines. In the export market, net revenues was 2.9 billion reais, a 64% growth over the first quarter 2019, boosted by an increase at 27.7% in volume sold and 28.5% in higher prices. Now please let's move to page 18 to talk about JBS Brazil. First quarter highlights was our net revenues was 8.2 billion reais, which corresponds to a 20.6% increase in relation to the first quarter 2019. EBITDA for the quarter was 338 million reais, which corresponds to a 73% growth over the first quarter 2019, with a 4.1% margin. In the domestic market, net revenue was 4.9 billion reais, a 28.6% increase over the first quarter 2019, due to a growth of 7.2% in volumes and 19.9% in prices. Friboi continues to consolidate its position as the main beef brand in the Brazilian market and has been expanding its strategic partnership through the Açougue Nota 10 program, a new model of beef sale, which aims to develop a special sales channel in retailers and help them manage their butchers, training professionals, avoiding waste, and differentiating their product at the point of sale. In the export market, net revenues increased 10.6%, reaching 3.3 billion reais due to a growth of 27% in prices, partially offset by a reduction of 13% in volume sold. The company is also investing in initiatives to offer products with higher value added in the export market, and in February this year, launched during GoFood 2020, the largest food and beverages fair in the world, held in Dubai, the Farms Friboi brand. Now let's move to the next page, where we talk about JBS USA first quarter highlights. Net revenues was $5.2 billion for the quarter, an increase of 3.1% compared to the first quarter 2019, driven by an increase of 4.2% in volume sold, which more than offset a reduction of 1.1% in average sales price. EBITDA was $244 million, with EBITDA margin of 4.7% in the first quarter 2020. JBS USA Beef improved its product mix and continued to grow the volume of value-added programs. After the end of the quarter, JBS USA concluded the acquisition of Empire Packing in the United States, announced at the end of last year, reinforcing its performance in case-ready segment. This acquisition adds additional capacity to the existing case-ready business and places JBS USA as one of the three main case-ready operators in the country. Beef exports for JBS USA Beef in the United States performed above the American market rates, which grew 10.5% compared to the exported volumes for the same period in 2019. The main import markets for U.S. beef products in the period were Japan, South Korea, Mexico, and Canada. In Australia, the challenging cattle availability scenario, coupled with temporary and seasonal shutdown at some plants in the northern region of the country, which occurred due to the rains, impacted production volumes for the quarter. JBS Australia international sales posted 4% growth in the annual comparison due to higher prices and FX rate impact. Primo Foods prepared food operation continues to exceed its production volumes, diversifying the portfolio with new innovative launches, mainly in this next segment. Now let's move to the next page, JBS USA Pork first quarter highlights. Net revenue was $1.5 billion in the first quarter 2020, an 11% increase in relation to the first quarter 2019 due to a 6.1% growth in average prices and 4.9% in volume sold for the period. EBITDA was $129 million for the first quarter 2020, an increase of 22% in annual comparison with EBITDA margin of 8.7%. JBS USA pork results were due to a good supply of hogs in the United States and the solid pork demand in domestic and international markets, as well as the strong operational performance of this business unit. In the first quarter 2020, JBS USA pork sale exports grew 56% compared to the first quarter 2019, highlighting the increasing in export volumes to the Chinese market, which started importing pork cuts in addition to the traditional offals. The country reopening following the effects of COVID-19 and the continued impact of the African swine fever indicates that China will continue to lead the global pork imports for some time. Plum Rose continues to expand its presence in the prepared food segment in the United States as a result of a strong operational performance and volume growth. In April, this business unit began the construction of a new plant for the production of pre-cooked and cooked bacon in Moberly, Missouri, with a capacity of 24 million pounds per year, which we will start operating in 2021. Now moving to Pilgrim's Pride first quarter highlights, net revenues of total $3.1 billion, a 13% higher than first quarter 2019. EBITDA was $166 million, 19% lower than the same period last year, while EBITDA margin was 5.4%. In the USA, the market tracked normal seasonality initially during the first quarter before wider implementation at travel and movement restrictions due to COVID-19 disrupted retail and food services channel demand. The large bird deboning market was especially volatile during the quarter and remained challenged compared to 2019. PPC continued to improve its relative performance versus the industry across all its business units. The unit also adapted quickly to the change in channel demand by shifting the mix of its production capabilities, supported by its close partnership with key customers, a strong focus in execution by PPC team members, the geographic diversity, and its footprint and its presence across all bird size categories. In Mexico, revenue was stable. Market environment during the first quarter was difficult as weak macro conditions persisted longer than expected, contributing to uncertainties in consumer spending. PPC increased share of non-commodity products with strong execution and growth in prepared foods have helped and partially offset the weakness. In Europe, the legacy operations once again delivered robust results in the first quarter, and the newly acquired European operations also performed well and continue to generate positive EBITDA. Now, on the next page, we just have our unique global platform, which Tomazoni mentioned in his speech. And in the last page, we have our exports breakdown by region. With that, I would like to open to the question and answer session.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star key, followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone now. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star two. Our first question comes from Leandro Fontanesi, Bradesco BBI.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. I have two questions. The first one, I appreciate the comments that you provided in the Portuguese conference call, but trying to ask the question in a different way. When we look into the U.S. market, and I understand that you mentioned that protein spread based on the spot today is not very good reference given, you know, the volatility. But if we consider April, for example, and I understand that there might the data, even if it's not perfect, suggests that some improvement in terms of margins. And just to understand if this is enough, if you think this is enough to compensate for the higher operating costs that you have with safety gear, idleness, and also the bonuses that you mentioned. So just to understand if this movement would be positive for, in the absolute terms for EBITDA in April, for example, in comparison to March. So if you could give us a direction, not any further details. And the second question is, I understand that there's a difference between the impact of coronavirus for integrated businesses in comparison to non-integrated businesses. And I understand that in Brazil, we are, you know, just beginning to see some impacts in some of the plants that you have. So just to understand what's the impact, what's the difference in terms of impact, the negative impact of coronavirus in integrated businesses in comparison to non-integrated. If in Brazil you're doing the adjustment in chick placement, for example, in the industry in anticipation to any potential impacts from coronavirus. Thank you.
Thank you, Leandro, for your question. I'll ask André, please, could you answer, Leandro, about the U.S. beef? And then, Wesley, maybe I think you can answer about the integrated business in Brazil.
Morning, Leandro. Just to elaborate a little bit more. So the spot market in the U.S. That USGA report and most of the analysts cover probably is responsible for something around 20% of the total meat that we that is sold. That's my point, that they spot, especially in a time with high volatility like we're seeing right now. It's not a good way. On the cost side, it's very tough for us to have a clear view at this point. Consider how fast we are implementing all the actions to protect our workers. So again, we have been this now for a little bit more than 2 months, and we're taking actions every day. And to be honest, and because we put so much emphasis on the safety of our workers, costs now for us is secondary. So I'm not looking as close as we used to look at costs, because now there is a bigger priority of the safety of work. So we're implementing actions every day. It's very hard to have a full visibility how this will be for the quarter, Some items are easy when you decide to pay an extra thank you bonus for the team members. This is easy to calculate. But how fast we are implementing the actions, how this impacts our operation, how this is slowed down the normal production facility on top of the cost to stop some plants, on top of what we have done in U.S. that we take the vulnerable population, the most vulnerable population out of our plant. And that represents around 10% of the team members. So it's a little bit frustrating, I understand that, but we don't have the full visibility of the cost. We add around 1,000 people, divided in two groups. One is the extra cleaning that they're doing, and the other one, kind of half and half, and the other one just to enforce the new policy related to COVID and educate our team members of COVID. So many actions at the same time in several different plants, that's hard to have the visibility. On top of that, the spot is just a small piece of the market that does not represent, in a market with the volatility that we have right now, the full picture. And as I said before, on top of that, we're taking it from export, putting the domestic market, too much volatility for me to try to give you any direction. Do I expect overall that we will follow the normal trend in terms of second quarter being much better than the first quarter? At this point, probably yes. We expect that this normal trend will continue to apply for this year, for the second quarter to be better than the first quarter, as it is pretty much every year.
Leandro, this is Wesley. Sorry, Tomazano, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Wesley. I suppose that you are not, you have dropped your lines. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Leandro, so regarding COVID effect in Seara and being integrated, we have, since the beginning of the spread of COVID-19 in Brazil, we have been working with a very, very strong protocol to take care of our team members. We are working in partnership with specialists and the best hospitals and infectologists in Brazil to make sure that we have a safe environment in our plants. We have very fast, we were very fast to implement all of that, those protocols in our plants. And we're very, very confident of the safety we're providing to our team members in our plants. That being said, we are not working with a scenario of reducing in a significant way or our tick placements and doing predicting any sort of disruption in our plants ahead of time. So we're not working with that scenario given the protocol we have implemented in our plants.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate the effort in explaining the situation.
Our next question comes from Rafael Fomer, Logos Capital.
Good morning, Tomazone and Guilherme. Thanks for taking my question. I understand that the moment is predictability is very low and the company is focused on other fronts. But could you please give us an update on the lifting of U.S. operations, please? Any news on this would help. Thanks.
Sorry, I lost the hand part of your question. Could you repeat that, please?
Oh, yes, sure. I understand that the predictability is very low, and the company is focused on other fronts. But could you give us an update on the lifting of the U.S. operations, please?
Okay, now I understood. Now, the listing is our priority because there is a lot of value to unlock to all of the stakeholders, all of shareholders. But at this moment, really, we are not looking at this project. We are focused on to protect our team members and to provide food for the world.
but the project is in the top priority of the company. Sorry if I not could be specific, but it's what I can tell you now.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Brian Hunt with Wells Fargo Securities.
Thank you for your time. I was wondering if you could discuss the migration of your beef and pork capacity to retail products from food service products, particularly in and or export products, particularly in the U.S. operations, you know, given the dramatic slowdown in food service operations around the world.
Andre, maybe you start to answer the question.
Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for the question. Brian.
Hey, good morning.
Here in US,
yep.
Here in US, the migration is very simple for us, Brian. We do not have any plant fully dedicated to food service in the beef and pork side. So I'd say that this migration for us was very seamless. Adjust some products, but really, really easy migration. And you're right, there was a slowdown in food service that, by the way, it's picking up in the last 2 weeks, Brian. Surprised me a little bit. The pace of the pickup in food service is still way below the normal, but start to picking up. The only area, Brian, that we have a little bit is some of the in the further process bacon line that we have that dedicated food service. That line it's hard to convert for retail. But we're running the other lines in our further process more, so we're not going to have any less volume, even the prepared food side, because we're not running full the food service line. I would say that the volume will be higher despite of that. So no impact, no material impact in U.S. at all to change from food service to retail. Very easy.
All right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Brian. Go ahead, Brian.
And then my second question is, you know, you all invested in, you know, Scott Auto Technology several years ago because of the automation. You've got a fully automated sheep processing facility in Australia. You know, how can you take that technology and roll it out as quick as possible, maybe to improve social distancing and or, you know, the problems with attendance and absenteeism? You know, where do you kind of stand in that timeline, and what kind of improvements should we expect in automation in the next 12 to 24 months?
Brian, automation and digitalization has been a priority for the company for the last years. We are focused on that because we strongly believe that we will help improve the productivity of the factory. Now, I think we have one more incentive to accelerate the project, but we are not in a condition to give you a program and a time that what will be put in place.
I will hand it off to somebody else, and thank you for your time, and best of luck. Stay safe.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Carla Casella with JP Morgan.
Hi, I was wondering if you could give us a sense for what level of capacity you think the U.S. beef, pork, and chicken markets are currently running, given the plant shutdowns. I guess industry-wide and then your own business as well.
Sorry, I had a difficulty to understand your question. I don't know, the connection is not so good. Could you repeat that, please?
Yes, I'm wondering what capacity the U.S. is running currently for the beef industry, the pork industry, and the chicken industry, given the plant shutdowns that we've had, and then what you're running at in terms of your percentage of your capacity.
I don't know. I think is the line in the U.S. dropped. Andre, are you in the line? I think it's the guy that dropped the line. But I will answer that. What we know that the industry, the last information I have about last week, that the industry is working around 70% in beef and pork, and around 900% in chicken. And we are running a little bit more than this in our operation now. We are all our factories now is running.
Okay, great. That's helpful, and I can ask Andre next week on the U.S. call too. Thank you.
Okay, please, maybe a little better. We get more update information. Hello?
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ben Theurer with Barclays.
Hey, good morning, Tomazoni team. Thanks for taking my question. A couple of ones, and I'd like to start off with the Brazilian business. I mean, clearly, we've seen very strong performance on the EBITDA side in JBS Brazil, but also in the case of Seara, it was obviously an impressive quarter. Now, can you give us a little bit of a sense of what you expect for the rest of the year in terms of the domestic markets and the export markets, just considering that obviously FX for export has been very favorable, but what could that mean for pricing domestically and then ultimately consumer reaction to that facing a more challenging macroeconomic condition in Brazil? That would be my first question.
Wesley, would you like to answer this question?
For sure. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Current situation makes it very tough to make long-term predictions like this, right? We know that COVID makes the scenario unstable, right? And I guess no one knows and is able to do a very, very accurate prediction right now of how we're going to perform till the end of the year. What I can tell you is the performance we had on the first quarter. Yes, there were some fundamentals in the market that helped us, such as the exchange rate. But a lot of it comes from performance and execution, and a lot of the fruits that we were harvesting from work from previous years. So quality, innovation, execution in our team, with our team. So when I look forward, I see a lot of those scenarios. A lot of those fundamentals still, I do still believe that they'll still hold. And our performance, we're expecting that to continue and improve. What I can tell you is that it's very difficult to make a very precise prediction, but we believe these fundamentals and our execution should continue as strong.
Okay, perfect. Right there, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
And this is for all of our operations. It's too early to make a prediction or forecast for the year. We are facing really high volatility in the market. We need more time, we need more weeks, more months, that will be given a more stable, reaction to predict the consumer behavior or the demand, what will be changed for one chain to the other chain, what will be happened with the COVID in the different regions. It's really, really tough to predict. I know that you are not comfortable with this with answer, but unfortunately, we are not. It's not because we want to avoid to answer the question. It's because it's unpredictable with the information we have now.
That's okay, Tomazoni. And then not sure if Andre is back, but maybe you can answer my second two-folded question as well. So clearly with the capacity in the U.S., be it in beef and pork, as you said, running at about 70%, so clearly there's a lot of cattle and a lot of hogs that are not getting slaughtered right now. And my math suggests that we're running round about 3 million hogs and almost a million cattle that have been backed up and not slaughtered. So the question really is, do you think from this low slaughter activity and the impact it has on farmers, which basically get all the backlog and have all these animals ready to slaughter but can't put them into processing, do you think this is going to have a medium to more long-term impact disruption on cattle and hog supply way beyond what the current situation around COVID is and the uncertainty here? Obviously, I'm really thinking more of like 1 to 2 years out, what it could mean, and also in light of the Australian business, connecting that into it, that you got, I think, one plant suspended for exports to China. You've highlighted how pork exports to China were strong. So you're going to offset that out of the U.S. or out of Brazil. Just to understand a little bit that Australia piece, but particularly my question would be on this medium long-term impact from cattle and hog supply.
Thanks for that question.
Andre, you are back. Okay, go ahead.
Thanks for the question, Dan. Then I think that's one thing that's very important is all this situation that we are right now, this crisis that we fight together, does not change, in my perspective, the great outlook in terms of consumption of protein on a global basis at this moment. You still have a depth of protein in Asia. Then I think that U.S. will be, West, Brazil, Australia will be the ones that will supply for that pass. So demand, the mid to long-term perspective, in my view, continue to be very positive. So you are right, the production at this moment has been backing some of beef and pork. Just to, again, my perspective that we're running, the industry in U.S. is running now at 75%. In the beef and 84% in the pork. Of course, depending on how this virus will behave, we'll define how fast can we ramp up this production. The ramp up has been pretty good in the last 2 weeks in terms of increasing. And this will define how much can we catch up in terms of this production for the remainder of this year. I think that cattle, it's easier. A little bit easier than hogs. You hold the cattle in the farmers longer. The feedlot can slow down. So I think I don't anticipate any big disruption in the cattle supply. The other way around is that cattle will have plenty of supply. So I don't think that changed anything. The supply perspective, if anything, is positive in cattle. In the hog side, we are seeing a little bit of people need to eliminate hogs at the farm. I don't think that at this point is a huge movement, but they exist. What will be the impact in terms of supply for the long term in the hog? I think that will be related to how the government will support this farm. Everything that I hear from the government, there's a concern and a huge intention to support the farms. And as they support the farms, as we can run more, as the demand in Asia continues to be pretty strong, just remember that the growth in exports from U.S. in the first quarter, so before they were hit by this virus, was 500% higher than last year in the same quarter. So demand is there. The agreement's in place. I have the confidence that we'll be able, if the virus continues to go down, we'll be able to ramp up this production back. So I think that the perspective for the medium-long term continues to be very positive. We need to get through this situation that we are right now. The U.S. government has been very, very supportive for the farmers overall. I think that they will find a way to be supportive for the hog producers. And if the hog producers have the perspective and have the demand out there, I don't think that they're going to see any big reduction. We are not seeing any big reduction, and I don't think that they're going to see any big reduction that could compromise the supply for two years ahead. Again, too early. I'm just sharing with you my expectation and what I've seen talk with our producers.
Mm-hmm. And on Australia, the plant that got suspended for exports to China?
This is one of dozens of plants that we have globally that can export to China. And we never like to have a plant suspended, but what's the material impact of that in the reality for JBS overall? None. What we don't send for that plant, we send for another. That plant can send more, can supply more Japan and Korea. Again, it's never good, but the real material impact for us, consider the global footprint. We had from the U.S. a lot of good discussion and a lot of good perspective in sales from beef from the U.S. and from Canada to China. We just slowed down because of the availability now, but this, when is that they come back, we have plenty of plants available to export to China. So no material impact from that.
Okay. And then one quick last one for you, Andre. Do you think with social distancing having to be put in place, more investments into safety of workers, face masks, all that kind of stuff, do you think there is a substantial and relevant impact on operating costs and call it cost associated with human resources in the future as a result of the pandemic we're going through right now?
Yeah, there is. I visited five of our plants in the last 2 weeks, and I'm amazed how the workers embrace the new safety protocol that we put in place. Use a mask, use a face shield. It's not comfortable. We use it in the office all the time, every day. But they embrace there. I think that now there's a very good level of understanding of how this is relevant and why that's important. And I think that they are adjusting really, really fast. I was very positive, surprised in these five plants that I visited in the last 2 weeks. The acceptance, the embrace, and how they understand what they're doing. So the use of PPE in terms of productivity, I don't think that will have any impact. It will be more cost, no question. We are using disposable face masks. There's a cost related to that. And it's more than one face mask per day. We are using an average of 1.5 per day for each of our team members in a global base. We hire in the U.S. 1,000 extra people, around 500 for extra cleaning in all the common areas, and 500 for education related with COVID and enforcement of the new policy. There is an extra cost that will be with us until we have a vaccine, until this pandemic change course or go away. It will be. How much will be this cost is hard to say right now. But there is. We announced here in the U.S. that only in the U.S. and Canada we expect to invest right now from now to the end of the year over $100 million. And this is investment. This is safe investment. This is not related with additional cost because we stop a plant. This is the cost like masks. This is the cost like take the vulnerable population out. This is the cost like the extra 1,000 people. This is the cost like put physical barriers between the workers in the line when 6 feet is not possible. So this cost will be with us during this time of this pandemic.
Okay. Perfect. I'll leave it here and pass it on. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Lucas Ferreira with JP Morgan.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to ask Guilherme Guilherme, if you have an updated view on the CapEx for the year, if you have already revised budget, and what is the, if you have at least a range of expectation for the full year for CapEx, and what is all this volatility means to working capital for the company. There's also expectation on the working capital as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. On the first, as Tomazoni mentioned, we have a very robust liquidity position, so we don't have a need to revise our CapEx budget for the year. So we didn't had any CapEx restrictions because of that. So we had still the same guidance of around $1.2 billion for the entire company for the year. Second, the working capital, we don't have also great variations, except on the balance sheet in reais, given that the FX translations of accounts receivables and accounts payable. But this is, again, this is only on the translation. We don't have any, we are not having any pressure from the supply side or accounts receivable. I think, in fact, as we have credit limits with bank, we've been, especially from the second semester of last year, increasing our terms of payments. And at the same time, we were decreasing our accounts, our discounts of receivables, given that we don't need to incur in additional interest expenses when the accounts receivable discount becomes very expensive in situations where the market is in turbulence. So, but that's so one thing is offsetting the other, so we don't have main variances in working capital for the rest of the year.
And Lucas, about the CapEx, we didn't change the CapEx. We keep the CapEx because the fundamental of the business are very positive and for the future. And we need to keep doing our strategic investment.
Perfect. If I may, another quick question. In the chicken market, what is the price differential that you have from exporting from Brazil and from the U.S., and how do you see the dynamics of you know, the export market for chicken in China when you export through Pilgrim's and when you export through Seara? Well, how do you see the U.S. competing with Brazil? That would be my question, in China, from the U.S. In Brazil. Thank you.
I think is the answer is not just for chicken, it's for all of proteins. Each country is its own market there, because the position of the products are different. And you, for example, the answer to our question about chicken, paws and feet. There is not, I can say, the market is very huge. We don't need to compete. There is a market for everyone in there. No need to be competing one country to another country. The market is huge, a lot of markets. When you go to the other mix, the product, U.S. is more focused on commodity issues, and Brazil is more focused on more value-added products in terms of deboning, small portion. U.S. is more commodity, it's more like quarters. Then, in the end, there is not competition. Of course, we compete for all protein markets, but we compete in different layers.
That's clear, Tomazoni. Thank you, Guilherme, as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's question and answer session. I would like to invite Mr. Tomazoni to proceed with his closing statements. Please go ahead, sir.
I am especially grateful for our team of 240,000 around the world who are dedicated to providing food to the world when it needs it most. Thank you for your service and community. Thank you for all of you having participated in this conference. Thank you.
That does conclude the JBS audio conference call for today. Thank you very much for your participation. Have a good day, and thank you for using Chorus Call.